Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, happy Friday. This is Football Social Daily, a new podcast all about the Premier League every single day of the season. I'm Jim Salverson, and as we career into the weekend, we've got a load to get through on today's podcast. Today, we're going to be looking at Everton ending the FA Cup dreams of Boreham Wood last night in what was far from a comprehensive win for the Toffees. They've booked their place against Crystal Palace in the next round, but are there more important issues to worry about at Goodison Park right now? We're also going to preview our three picks from the weekend's football action with our tips if you're playing along with Who Knows Wins. It's a relegation special today, as we look at the wrong end of the table and some of the teams involved there, and you'll get the picks of myself, Niall McCorn, and Marley Anderson on that later, because that is who is joining me on today's podcast. How are we doing, lads?
Good, thanks, Jim. Pretty tired, to be honest, but as you say, the weekend is almost here, so you can relax on the sofa and take in some Premier League action soon, thankfully.
Marley, are you as buzzed for the weekend as Niall?
I am, yeah. I can't wait. I'm like a little kid being excited to go up to Newcastle tomorrow. Unfortunately, I did twist my ankle at football last night, so the 14 flights of stairs up to the top of the Leeds end are going to be very...
You're doing the Brighton game?
I am, yeah. I'm going up, yeah.
Lovely stuff. Well, we'll talk about that later. I'm off to the Football Museum in Manchester this weekend, which I've not done for a while, so I'm looking forward to that as well. But we won't get onto the Football Museum later. We'll leave that out. We're not a tourist podcast. We will talk about Newcastle versus Brighton later. And it's good we've got Marley on today's podcast, because being the proud magpie he is, I'm sure he's going to have a few comments on the story we are starting with on Football Social Daily. And that is the comments made by Newcastle co-owner Amanda Staveley. That's where we're going to start. A spectacular example of failing to read the room from the Newcastle co-owner, as she described Roman Abramovich's sale of Chelsea ahead of any potential sanctions he might face in the face of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. She described the fact he is being forced to sell up as not particularly fair. Marley, are you surprised that she has made these comments about a man who supports a questionable and oppressive regime in Russia, given her own connections with questionable and oppressive regimes?
I'm not surprised, no, because what was she going to say? Like, she can't sit there and say, you know, it's good that Abramovich has been taken... the club's being like he's being forced into this sale because he has dodgy friends. Like, she can't say that because she's got dodgy friends. Everyone knows that. You know, she can't say anything else. So I don't really get the uproar of like, oh, read the room, Amanda, read the room. Like, no, read her position. Like, you can't.
Well, she shouldn't be in that position. That's the point, isn't it? It's like
she is.
First of all, she's wrong. She's wrong.
Yeah.
Abramovich hasn't been forced to sell the club. That's just a complete misconception.
I know, yeah.
It's his choice to sell the club. He's not been forced to sell the club. And you talk about that quote, Jim. It's a shame that he's had a football club taken away from him. He's had nothing taken away from him, Roman Abramovich. Absolutely nothing. So in terms of the interview or the quotes that I've seen, which I will admit I've not watched or heard any interview, I've only seen printed quotes, which I think sometimes can be misconstrued. But I think, it, in all fairness to this situation, I think the comments that she's made are just plain and simply misinformed and wrong. Because Abramovich hasn't had Chelsea taken away from him. No one's taken Chelsea away from him. It's his decision to sell the club. So I think that's an interesting quote to get stuck into even before we talk about the deeper issues.
Yeah, but everybody also knows that he isn't technically having it taken away from him, but he is preempting something and cleaning himself.
Yeah, exactly. He's making a call before he gets a call made for him.
Yeah, because I mean that's why there was even reports of him taking didn't he transfer all his shares in a steelmaking company to himself, like 2 months ago, because they were a company that were about to up production of Russian tanks or something like that. So he clearly knows what's going on. So even though it's not technically being taken away from him, he's still protecting himself by, you know, doing what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. But in terms of the actual sort of the crux of the quote of her saying that, you know, that it's a shame that he's had it taken off of him. You're both right. You know exactly why Roman Abramovich has decided to sell the club. I just think it's a hard one to gauge this, because Marley's right. You know, she's not going to throw her position under the bus and, you know, her superiors, for want of a better term, under the bus. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, it was one of those questions where whatever she answered, it was always going to be met with some sort of controversy, I think.
Well, in that case, Niall, does it kind of cause you to question further the morals behind the Newcastle United takeover? It's something we've discussed again and again and again, whether the group that bought Newcastle United should have been allowed to do it, but it has been allowed. And we know that it is backed by a regime that many in the UK find questionable, find morally corrupt, I guess would be a reasonable phrase to use. So does that kind of put a question mark further in your mind about the takeover ever having taken place?
Well, I think it is a two-pronged answer to this. And the first prong is something which Damian St. John spoke about brilliantly yesterday on the podcast. He's a Chelsea fan, has been since the 80s, and he came on the show yesterday to give us his thoughts from a fan's perspective of Abramovich's decision to sell the club. And he made a great point that billionaires, in the large part, are not always the cleanest characters in society. To amass that amount of wealth, you naturally end up rubbing shoulders with some not very nice people, I think.
You've got to have screwed a few people over in the past. Even if you're a clean, inverted commas, millionaire like Elon Musk, yeah, etc., I'm sure there are people that he would have wronged in the past.
I think in terms of the visualisation of the difference between $1 million and $1 billion, if you saw that in a pile of cash in the street in front of you, you'd be staggered at how much bigger the billion pile is than the million pile. And, you know, this is a different question entirely about you know, socioeconomics and the political spectrum, which I think we try and sort of not avoid on this show, but we try and kind of tread carefully when we talk about it. But I think Damo was spot on yesterday when he said that when you are that rich, you end up rubbing shoulders with powerful people. And no doubt, Roman Abramovich has rubbed shoulders with powerful people. Amanda Staveley is rubbing shoulders with powerful people. And often, those powerful people, as you say, Jim, have had a questionable background. So I certainly think that that is, like I say, of a two-pronged answer here, that is one thread. The other thread would be, I saw that the Premier League are now considering adding a record check of human rights cases as part of the owners and directors test. I mean, should that not have been the case ages and ages and ages ago? You know, why has it taken Newcastle United to be bought for this to be thrown up into question?
Well, that in itself makes no sense, though, because, like, the whole sale with Newcastle was held up for months and months and months while they tried to prove that the PIF was Saudi, just in a sort of a coat, like an overall of, you know, like a cover, basically.
A disguise, basically.
Yeah, a disguise. So, but they couldn't prove that. So if yeah. if
oh,
they
you Saudis in disguise.
Yeah.
If, oh you...
if they bring in this thing of like, oh, we're gonna do these owners and directors tests, unless friggin' Mussolini decides to buy Brighton, he's not gonna fail, is he? He's gonna use a slightly different company. Or yeah. a different, you know, another disguise. Well, so
again, and that's the Newcastle fans' sort of gripe about the Premier League and the whole takeover being delayed, is that the Premier League tried to find a way to stop the takeover effectively, but it was their own rules that weren't up to scratch. And so Newcastle's prospective owners, now their current owners, found loopholes. And why wouldn't they? To get what they want. And you know, that's just business, I guess. So, I mean, listen, as someone who's seen my club be absolutely shafted by the footballing authorities in this country, I'm bitter about it. I'm bitter about the owners and directors tests. My club nearly got ran out of business. We had administrations, we had nearly got liquidated twice. We're the first Premier League team ever, and still to this day, to go into administration. What Derby County are going through now, which is awful, are what Portsmouth went through in the Premier League. Was that not a message enough to make sure that the owners and directors test is more rigorous, or even better, an independent body decides who should own football clubs? Because they're not usual businesses. They are community assets. I've said this loads of times on the podcast. People are probably sick of me talking about it. But I'm still really annoyed at the fact that no lessons were learned from what happened to my football club. You know, and we're not the only ones. It happened to Leeds. It happened to Bolton. Bury have gone out of business. These are obviously clubs of varying sizes. But how can that happen to my team 12 years ago? This was before the explosion of TV rights and the billions were increased in terms of the revenue the Premier League makes. This was before that. This was in 2010. And I'm not going to go through a list of all of the owners that my club had over the years and why they were bad and why they were crooks, etc., etc. But the fact is, the Premier League saw us as an embarrassment when actually they were partly culpable, because they waved through some of these owners blasé without really checking their background. And so therefore, you know, in terms of what needs to be done in future to protect football clubs and make sure we don't have these people circling around football clubs that maybe could cause them harm, there needs to be a more rigorous owners and directors test. And I don't blame Newcastle fans, and this isn't a dig at them or even the Newcastle ownership, because they did what they wanted to do, found loopholes in the Premier League's rules. So I think, like I say, it's a two-pronged answer where, first of all, the Premier League need to do more in terms of their owners and directors test, because it just isn't good enough. And that goes for the EFL as well, because we've seen it far too often in the lower leagues too, with clubs going under and struggling financially. And secondly, as was suggested on yesterday's podcast, rich and powerful people often have a questionable background. So I think that those would be the two things for me that I would want to get across when it comes to this.
You mentioned the review at the moment and the consideration for putting human rights clauses into the owner's test when it comes to Premier League clubs. Now, this is part of a wider review. It's just the human rights part that has caught people's attention because of the current news agenda. This comes from a report in The Guardian. And my issue here, and Niall kind of touched on it there, Marley, is the Premier League is a business. It's a consortium of clubs and owners who are primarily in business to make money. Now, any rules that would be voted through in a change to Premier League rules, be it owners, tests or whatever, need to be voted through by members of those Premier League clubs. You need 14 of the 20 to pass any kind of resolution. So ultimately, it's going to be very difficult to get anything through, because clubs look at the future of their business and their options for selling in the future. And as Niall says, the majority of people who have the majority of cash probably have questionable practices at some point in their past, be it human rights, be it business practices, be it whatever. So if you're limiting the people that can buy a football club, you're also limiting your potential to make money from that football club. And yes, clubs are community assets, but that has very much been forgotten in favour of clubs being seen as businesses now. So any such rules are, in my view, are really unlikely to actually get voted through anyway, even if they do feel like a good idea. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, probably would, yeah, because I just think if you bring in this sort of rule, like they've got rules in here now, you know, in the owners and directors tests, that people have walked up to in the last, you know, 3-4 years or however many new owners there've been in the last 3 to 5 years, and they've looked at it, and everyone who's done their due diligence has gone, ha, this is a silly test, we can pass that easy. Like, then, like, that's exactly what the Saudis did. They went, there's a massive loophole there that doesn't say, that can't prove that the PIF is Saudi Arabia's government and crown, you know, presidency or whatever you want to say.
It's quite funny, really. It's literally called the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, and they couldn't prove exactly that the Saudis were behind it. It's so madness.
That's how poor the owners and directors test is. So yes, it does need improving. However, you know, as Jim said, you know, everyone's got to vote it through. Everyone's probably got skeletons in the closet that they want to keep in firmly in the closet. And everybody, I think if you brought it in, it just exploits more loopholes. Like, you can say, oh, you know, we're gonna test people's human rights record, but where does that extend to? Because, you know, human rights in the UK is like exploiting 0 hours contracts and labour laws and stuff like that. Mike Ashley's empire is built on exploiting 0 hours contracts. So he could probably then go, oh, I probably shouldn't buy Derby or whoever he might want to buy, because he's got dodgy stuff in his past. And every rich person has, as we've mentioned before. There's no clean billionaires. There's no clean millionaires. And the going rate for a club in the Premier League is at least 150 million quid.
Yeah.
Who's got that kicking around in the you know, and down the back of the sofa? No one's got that.
It brings it back to the Portsmouth thing, is when we were in administration in the Premier League and we had no money and we were in dire straits financially, obviously the Premier League were desperate to find us an owner. So, because it was embarrassing for them that they had a club in the top flight in this biggest league in the world, the most watched league in the world, in administration. It was a stain on their product. It was embarrassing for them to have Pompey in such trouble financially. And so they just waved through any owner they could find. And obviously with a club like Portsmouth in that situation and an asset in trouble in that manner, you attract the sharks. The vultures come flying in and pecking at the carcass, and you get the dodgy people, the people you don't want involved in football clubs. They're the ones that come sniffing and circling because they smell an opportunity. And obviously, when you take on a basket case club, that just became a situation in which the Premier League said, right, okay, we'll have any old person come in and take it over. And naturally, those people weren't fit for purpose. So I think that is a situation that we find ourselves in now with football ownership, which maybe was started 20 years ago by Roman Abramovich. And now the billions and the money in football has got so great that you are looking at just an exclusive pool of people that are able to take on Premier League football clubs, because that is the nature of the game now. It's sad to say, but it won't be the first time that you'll hear, you know, Amanda Staveley fielding questions on the ownership of Newcastle. I mean, that will be a thread of questioning that will follow her for the next 15 years or however long she's involved with the club. So it won't be the first, well, it isn't the first, and it certainly won't be the last time you'll hear those sorts of questions thrown at her.
It will be the last time we talk about it on today's podcast, though, because we're going to move on to footballing issues, finally. We're going to do our Who Knows Wins predictions. Yet I've picked 3 games from the weekend's action that we're going to try and pick winners and losers from. We'll do it next on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily. Let's get stuck into a little weekend preview of some of the games that are taking place on Saturday with Who Knows Wins, which is a sports social game where mates, families, colleagues pit their wits against each other for real hard cash and, of course, bragging rights as well. We're playing it on Football Social Daily. You can play it too by getting the free app. You can download it from the App Store or the Play Store, play directly against your mates on it. You can build custom leagues, or you can join the thriving community of other players playing existing competitions like Pick 10, where you pick 10 of the Saturday league results. It's exactly what we're doing. We're playing for the $6,000 prize fund as well as you. You don't have to win. Get everything right and win the top prizes. There's loads of prizes. They kind of trickle down. Even Marley won a couple of quid the other day, which shows how easy it can be. So if you want to take
on... your personal best is 2 at the minute, James.
Yeah, I'm not very good at this. So if you want to take on us, the Sports Social team, you can get the app. You can join the Pick 10 League, and that's where we're going to be focusing today with our picks from 3 of those fixtures. It's a relegation special today. Looking at the wrong end of the table, we're looking at Burnley, Chelsea, Newcastle, Brighton, Norwich, Brentford. They're the three games. We're going to start off with Burnley versus Chelsea. Now, two teams desperate for points at the moment. Very different reasons. Chelsea need that top four. Burnley trying to escape the drop and maybe looking like one of those bottom three that are in there at the moment that are most likely to escape if one of them is. The smart money's on Chelsea for this fixture, Niall. It has to be because of their league position. But it's not going to be straightforward for Thomas Tuchel, this one, is it?
No, absolutely not. And you say that, you know, the straightforward answer would be to lump on Chelsea and go for them for the victory at Turf Moor. But if you look at their form across the last 5 games, identical form. Both Chelsea and Burnley have won 2, drawn 2 and lost 1 of their last 5 Premier League games. So maybe it's not quite as straightforward as you say, as some people are suggesting. I still think Chelsea will be too strong for Burnley. I spoke to Dean Hammond, who will be on the dugout tonight, along with Matt Jarvis, previewing the weekend's games. We didn't speak about this game, but he did mention that he watched Leicester versus Burnley midweek in that game at Turf Moor midweek, where Leicester were 2-0 winners. And he said, Burnley just looked shot. Those were his words. He says that they just looked, they looked leggy, they looked tired, they just looked like they didn't have any ideas. You can't afford to look like that against the Chelsea side, who will no doubt be a real tough test for Sean Dyche's men. But that being said, we've seen Burnley pull up some strange results in the past. Chelsea have been patchy. They've drawn too many games in the last few weeks, at least since Christmas. That's certainly been the case in my memory. So, yeah, I think I'll be going for Chelsea on this one, but 10% have gone for the draw and 2% for Burnley. So I wouldn't be shocked because, you know, in the Premier League, anything can happen. And Burnley have certainly upturned in form. They've got a lot to fight for. Chelsea know that they're not going to win the league. They're probably going to finish in the top four. So in terms of who's got more at stake, you'd have to suggest Burnley. That whether that will alter the balance in terms of the play, who knows? But I still fancy Chelsea for this one. And if Burnley win, fair play to the 2% that have picked them.
I hinted a minute ago, Marley, that I fancy Burnley to maybe get out of the bottom three if anyone is. They've got 7 points from the last 3 matches and not against poor opposition either. They were against Brighton, Spurs and Crystal Palace. They're going to be all right, I think, especially considering that Leeds and Everton look determined to go down in some way at the moment. Can you see them getting a point here to help their survival?
Kind of like Niall, I wouldn't be massively surprised. But I think this is just more of a test of where Chelsea are as a club. You know, they've got a lot of off-field stuff hanging over them, as we've talked about. And it didn't help them do much against Luton in the week. You know, they struggled to a 3-2 win, came from behind twice to beat Luton, who are obviously lower league opposition. So it's not straightforward, this. I've just looked at the weather forecasting, it's sunny, which helps Chelsea because you don't want to go to Turf Moor on a driving rain, horrible day because they'll just outfight you. But Chelsea will have to work hard for it, and they will have to, they will play a team who they know are fighting for their lives. So, and we all know Burnley get better in the second half of the season as compared to the first, because they were woeful in the first half of the season. But now they have started picking up a few points here and there. So they're very much in this game. I can't see them winning. I think Chelsea will come through this. But I almost think it's like a perfect test as well, because if Chelsea can go and beat Burnley and be kind of comfortable doing it. I think that'll just kind of set them up for a decent finish to the season and to really cement that third place and move on and look towards the Champions League to see if they can retain that.
Does that mean you've gone for a Chelsea win on this one, Marley?
It does, yeah. I'm going for Chelsea win, yeah.
How about you, Noel?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Chelsea win.
All right, I'm the differential here then. Here's a little stat for you. Burnley have only lost 4 times at home this season from their 12 games. 6 of those have been
Everything
draws.
Else has been postponed, has it?
Yeah, I'm going for the draw, though. I think there's a potential for a draw in this one. And you always got to look for the differentials in these games. Right, next one. Newcastle United.
It's served you well so far.
I'm not having a massive amount of success so far in this game. This weekend's the one, I tell you. Anyway, Newcastle versus Brighton. Now, if Newcastle had started the season with the players they have now and the manager they have now, Marley, where would they be in the league? Because their form of late has been excellent.
First. I don't know. Obviously, it's one of them questions where you can never know the answer, really, because it'll just never, you know, never be there. But I don't think we'd be in trouble as we have been. But for me, it's the coaching more than the players. For me, I think it's the coaching has had more time now to settle in, and then the players give us, you know, the January transfers give us the boost around in the mood and a sort of fresh start style, like type of thing. Like, right, we've got these guys now. This is the second half of the season. We are good enough to get out of this. But I think the on-pitch stuff is what people are overlooking, and people, you know, people are just going, oh, you know, they've bought their way out of this. They've bought their way out of that. Oh, Chris Wood, 25 million. Kieran Trippier, 20 million. And in reality, Wood hasn't scored. Trippier's been injured for a few weeks. Dan Burns played 2 games, or maybe 3 games. Bruno Guimaraes hasn't started a game because the current midfield is so good, and the midfielders, all our midfielders have been here for at least, well, a year in Willock's case, 4 or 5 years in Shelby's case, and 2 or 3 in Joe Linton's case. So.
Who would have thought you'd be saying that Jonjo Shelvey and Joe Linton in midfield were so good?
That's the reason, though, why if Newcastle stay up, Eddie Howe won't win manager of the season because of what Marley says. Probably, people will say, oh, it's the money. But, you know, Newcastle have won 5 games this season. It's the same as Watford. I know Watford have played
all five
more.
All 5 under Eddie Howe as well.
Exactly, and they're unbeaten in the last 5. And you think of the games that they've won, they beat Leeds 1-0. Massive result for them in terms of the relegation fight. They beat Everton 3-1, a side that they were reeling in at the time. They beat Aston Villa, who have been patchy, who are now above them by 1 place in the table, albeit a 5-point difference. Big draw against West Ham a couple of weeks ago. That was huge for Newcastle in terms of managing to peg back a side chasing for the Champions League. And then Brentford in their last game last weekend, they beat them 2-0 at Brentford Community Stadium, and now they've overtaken Brentford in the table. So in terms of those games that Eddie Howe has had, 4 wins from the last 5 games, including a draw, and they've all been against teams around them in the table. So in terms of the big games, that's been the difference for me, because I know when you're down there, every game is a big game, but to take points off the sides around you, you can't ask any more than that.
Brighton, probably it's the reverse story for them. They are looking to avoid a 4th successive defeat with this game. They did well at the beginning of the season, then they kind of tailed off. Do you think they've got that on the beach mentality already, Niall? They can't get into Europe. They shouldn't really get into trouble.
They're always on the beach. They're from Brighton.
That's a very good point. It's not a very nice beach, though. It's all pebbly, isn't it, down there? Do you think they've kind of switched off, though?
I'm not sure. I just think maybe that is where they should be. I think this is their best ever season since they've come up to the Premier League. Obviously, Graham Potter, everyone was mentioning how much of a great coach he is. We didn't really see that in terms of league positioning. A lot of people felt that Chris Hughton's sacking at the time 2 or 3 years ago was a very harsh one. And the first 2 seasons under Graham Potter, they finished just a jot above the dotted line and narrowly avoided relegation. But this season, I think Potter's coaching has shone through. They're 10th in the table. They've been been in the top half for the majority of the season. As you say, they started really, really well. But maybe that start was a bit of overachievement, and now 10th, 11th is roughly where they should be in the Premier League standings. Regardless of whether they finish 10th, 12th, 13th, I think that will be a huge success story for Brighton and Hove Albion, who, let's not forget where they've come from, what they've built at the club, the infrastructure they've got there. They've got a manager who certainly knows what he's doing. He has a distinctive style of play. And the fact that, you know, he's gone in there and managed to achieve a potential top half finish for Brighton and Hove Albion, I think speaks a lot about his quality of coaching. In terms of things tailing off and maybe that mentality creeping in, look at their last three games, of which all have been defeats, as you say. 2-0 to Villa, 3-0 to Burnley, and 2-0 to Manchester United. Now, that game against United at Old Trafford was unlucky because Lewis Dunk got sent off, but it kind of knocked the momentum out of them a little bit because they were very good on that night at Old Trafford, it has to be said, and they got beaten. And then they lost 3-0 to Burnley, a team who had lots to play for down at the bottom of the table. They were fighting, and then obviously that defeat to a patchy Aston Villa would have been really disappointing last weekend. So, you know, you add that up, that's 9 goals conceded without reply in the last 3 games. And for me, that has been the issue for Brighton, and it always has been. It's the top end of the pitch. They don't have a sharp shooter. They don't have a striker who can bag you 15 goals a season. Neil Mopay is very, very streaky. I think he can be good in patches, but then he'll go off the boil and he won't score for months. Danny Welbeck, you know, we know his quality in the Premier League, but he just can't stay fit. And their other midfield players are good players, but there's no one there that you can hang your hat on and say, they'll be the difference. They're the out-and-out striker that can bag you a couple of goals in those crunch games in the middle of a season. So I think that's the issue for Brighton, for me, is the inability to score goals. Something Newcastle haven't had a problem with recent fixtures. They've managed to find a way to get past their opposition. So I think this will be an interesting game. But yeah, for me, that's where Brighton's issues have been.
Clean sweep for Newcastle, are we thinking on this one? I've certainly gone for a Newcastle win.
I think this is two very well thought of coaches going toe-to-toe, and you've got a team in good form against a team in not good form, so I'm going to go for the draw. I fancy a draw for this one.
I think the same. I think it'll be a draw. Obviously, I'm hoping for a win, but I think we've never beaten Brighton in the Premier League, Newcastle. So 9 attempts, 5 draws, 4 defeats. So I think last season they beat us 3-0 twice. I think they beat us 1-0 earlier this season, if I remember rightly. But yeah, it's a massive test for where we are as a club, I think, because we've played a lot of teams and picked up a lot of points recently, but Brighton are the best football inside that we've played in the last 6 weeks. They keep the ball really well. And in the last few years, that record has been down to us being primarily a counter-attack team, so letting them have possession and then trying to hit on the counter-attack, whereas now we actively try and win the ball back, you know, all over the pitch, and rather than just sit in and hope for the best on a counter-attack. So it'll be a really interesting game, because I still don't know how good we are against a team that will try and do that yet, because there's been signs of us getting better, but, you know, does it come out into a point or 3 points? So I think it's really hard to call this one, but I'd take a point, and I'd have to put money on it. So yeah, I'd go for a draw.
Right, final game from our trio is Norwich versus Brentford. Now, Norwich did look like for a little bit they had a chance to potentially escape the drop.
Blockbuster.
Yeah, some good performances, points picked up after the appointment of Dean Smith. But now, lost the last 3, rock bottom of the table. Escape looking very, 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 very unlikely now.
Yeah, unfortunately for Norwich City, the difference at the moment to safety is at least 5 points, and that doesn't take into account their wretched goal difference of minus 40. They've conceded 55 goals this season and scored just 15. So even if they did manage to get out of it by some miraculous attempt of getting to, which is where Everton are at the moment, Everton's goal difference, minus 13. So I think that there's a lesson to be learned there in that. But that being said, the last 3 defeats for Norwich, 2-0 away at Southampton. Saints' form at St Mary's has been excellent recently. So they're the informed team in the Premier League, or one of at the moment, Southampton. And then the 2 games before that were against Liverpool in the Premier League and Manchester City at Carrow Road. So Let's not read too much into those three defeats. I think
they've been better. They just haven't been good
enough. Yeah, I mean, they drew with Crystal Palace at the start of February, and then at the end of January, they beat Watford 3-0, which might have been, for some, the turning point. Taking points off of Watford, winning in such emphatic fashion, could have been the springboard for them to kick on. Just hasn't been the case. I think this one with Brentford, though, could be one of the few games of the season that Norwich City might get a full allocation of points. And the reason I say that is because their first win in the Premier League campaign came in November, and it came against Brentford. And I remember talking about it at the time and suggesting that the reason that that was their first win of the season is because they know Brentford. They came up from the Championship with them last season. Obviously, Norwich won the division and Brentford came up as one of those three sides promoted to the Premier League. So I definitely feel that it could be their fifth win of the campaign, just purely because I don't think there's that mental scarring and that kind of fear factor of coming up against some of the better players in the Premier League and the better teams, because no disrespect to Brentford, but these are all players that Norwich City will be familiar with from their time together in the Championship. So the statistics to be read into a little bit with that: Brentford have conceded two or more goals in their last 9 Premier League away games. So if you're talking about a side who's only scored 15 goals this season, Norwich City by far the fewest, you're coming up against a side who on the road have conceded a lot of goals lately. And I think Thomas Frank is really starting to feel the pressure. They are staring it in the face at the moment, Brentford. I think that their good start to the season, something which Norwich didn't have, is the reason why they are 15th at the moment and not closer to the precipice, because form lately has been absolutely wretched. Although Christian Eriksen came off the bench for his first appearance in their last game, whether he'll be called upon from the start, who knows, but Brentford need something. They need a spark, a bit of quality, something to kind of kick away from those relegation places, because they are not looking good at the moment. And I think the saving grace for them right now is how bad the likes of Norwich, Watford and Leeds United have been to kind of keep them above it.
Niall sounds like he's going for a Norwich victory there, Marley. What are you going for in this one? I've gone for the draw.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with that. I think I'd go for a draw. I think if anyone wins it, I think it'll be Norwich. More for the fact that Brentford are playing so badly. I think they're going to probably start Ivan Toney for the first time in a few weeks. I think it'll be 4 weeks. He hasn't started for 4 weeks, so he'll probably start the game.
Since shouting in an Instagram post, wasn't it? That seems to have coincided with him disappearing from the team.
All I can say is I hope she was worth it, Ivan. But yeah, never mind. If he comes back and gets a link up with Eriksen, that could be the springboard they need to get out of this relegation mire. But they are very, very, very much in it right now, because they have been poor for a few weeks. So I think if anyone wins it, I think it'll be Norwich. But I can see it being a drab, dire, goalless or 1-1 draw.
Sounds fun. If you think you can do better than our predictions, then get yourself the Who Knows Win app. Enter the Pick 10 League and you can keep an eye on the action with live updates. You can even get involved in the live chat as people go head to head in that league. And don't forget, you don't need to get them all right to win. You just need to get more than everyone else across Who Knows Wins. You might be lucky. Download the app from the App Store, or get to Google Play, you can get it there as well. Who Knows Wins, take us on this weekend. Right, we're going to turn our attention to the FA Cup next, because Everton overcame Boreham Wood last night in what you might have thought was going to be a predictable result, but the game was anything but a walkover. We'll box it off next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back, Football Social Daily. We're going to talk about Premier League team Everton's game against Boreham Wood last night in the FA Cup very quickly. Everton creeped past Boreham to claim a place in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. They will be playing Crystal Palace in that. The final score was 2-0. Now, even with losing this match, the cup run for Boreham Wood has been really impressive, Marley. This is something that this lower league team really need to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, this is what the FA Cup's all about. Boreham Wood getting to the fifth round of the FA Cup. I mean, Jesus, that's a hell of an achievement. It could go down as good as anything, you know, we've seen in the last 10, 20 years. You know, a bunch of part-time lads going away to a Premier League ground is literally what dreams are made of. So even though they got, you know, 20% possession and only had one shot in the entire game, not one of them will give a toss this morning because they'll all be waking up, seeing their pictures taken by professional photographers, going through every moment of that defeat and thinking, do you know what? We only got beat 2-0. It's not an embarrassment. We didn't get beat 9 or 10. We got beat 2-0 by, you know, two goals from Salomon Rondon, who scored, what was he scored, like 40-odd goals for Venezuela or something. He's like their all-time top scorer and been around the Premier League for best part of 10 years. So it's mint for them. Obviously, you know, they were never really going to win that game, let's be honest. But it's not about that, as we said. You know, it's about the finances of the club. Getting that far, you get a few hundred grand in the pot. Everton, I think... I don't know what it is. I don't know if they give them the gate receipts or whatever, but usually, you know, a lot of the time Premier League clubs do a split and give the lower league teams a bigger share of the ticket revenue. But I'm sure they did something, Everton. I think they provided the kit for them as well. They paid for a new kit, a commemorative strip that they were wearing last night, which was really nice as well. And I seen last night, I'm going to put it on our Twitter and Facebook later, Frank Lampard texted Luke, I think it's called Garrard, the Boreham Wood manager, before the game on Monday, Monday 7th of February, it says it was, and he just said, like, just wanted to congratulate you on getting through to this round. I never really touched base before games, but we'll make you very welcome when you come to Goodison Park. Hopefully not too welcome when the game starts. Classic Frank. And then, like, on a coach-to-coach level, I could see what it meant to you, and that's why we do the job. So it's all just a really nice end to a nice journey. So I think it just sort of reiterated what the FA Cup's all about, and I was a fan of Boreham Wood's little journey to the fifth round.
Now you've talked about how nice Frank Lampard and Everton have been to Boreham Wood. I almost feel guilty about what's going to come next because we're probably going to tear into them a little bit. I mean, Boreham Wood, you mentioned the 20% possession of shot on goal, etc. Yeah, that is true. But I think they came with a game plan. They went out there to frustrate Everton and they did that for a large portion of the game. But even with that in mind, Noel, considering the gulf between these two teams, Marley mentioned professional, non-professional, there's 100 odd league places between the two of them, you would expect Everton to produce something more dynamic than the performance they put in last night, even with the changes that they made to their team. It was still a strong 11.
I knew this was coming, and we said this yesterday on the podcast, that this is a lose-lose situation for Everton.
Yeah.
If they don't thrash Boreham Wood, then you get these sorts of questions where people go, this is a Premier League team, they should be hammering Boreham Wood. If they do beat Boreham Wood 4-0, then everyone goes, oh well, it's a Premier League team. They should be winning by that scoreline. I understand where you're coming from here, but Everton are not playing well at the moment. There's not a good vibe around the way that the games have gone for them. I think there's a better feeling amongst the supporters now, particularly at home with the arrival of Frank Lampard. I think that the fan base are excited. And those fans know that they're in a relegation scrap, so they will be needing to get behind their team, particularly at Goodison Park, between now and the end of the season. I think what we said yesterday on the podcast was that Lampard needed to pick his best team, and he didn't. And I'm surprised at that. And yes, I understand he probably worried about players getting injuries and stuff like that. Who am I to question Frank Lampard? I mean, he's an absolute legend of the Premier League, but I think he made the wrong choice. I think what we said yesterday, I know they still won 2-0, so it's hard to say that Lampard made the wrong choice of players. But, you know, Begovic in goal, Jonjo Kenny, Jared Branthwaite, Nathan Patterson, Gordon, Rondon. These aren't all kind of regular starting 11 names for Everton. And if they had a fully fit squad, would all of those players be on the team sheet? I don't think they would be. I think Everton needed to use that game last night with their first choice 11 to play themselves into a bit of form. Yes, they won the game 2-0, but the players that were featuring from the start aren't the players that we're going to see in the Premier League this weekend. For Everton, it's just not going to be the case. So I'm not sure on that decision when it comes to team selection.
Given the lackluster performance last night, Marley, given, I'd say, maybe a lack of impact that Frank Lampard has had since joining Everton, despite the good feeling around Goodison, do you think Everton fans will be panicking a little bit at the moment? When you look at the league table, they're just off the relegation zone at the moment, and yeah, they've got a game in hand on most of the teams around them, but they're still at the wrong end of the table. And it's not out of the question that in a couple of weeks time, I mean, even by the end of the weekend, they could find themselves in the relegation zone.
I think Everton will get out of this, and most people do as well, but that doesn't change the fact that right now they are right in this fight. You know, they've got overtaken last week by Newcastle. Burnley aren't far away. Leeds just got a new manager, so they might improve. So this is all very real for Everton. So with Lampard being a few weeks into the job now, that bounce, has it gone? Have you had it, you know? When they won that game, I think it was his second game in charge. I can't remember who they beat, but they beat someone. And it's like, is that it? Because it can't just be it. There needs to be more than that. They need to, when they plateau and come off that bounce, that plateau needs to be high enough to pick up, you know, at least a point a game, if not, you know, averaging 2 points a game, because they are very, very much in this. I don't know what the fixture list looks like for the rest of the season, but, you know, it begins on Monday night when they go to Spurs. You know, they have to go and get a result, because, you know, by the time Monday rolls around, you talk about the pressure of the table, you know, that could be even heavier when they go to when they turn up at 8 o'clock on Monday night. And then, you know, if Burnley have got a point this weekend against Chelsea, Everton will go into that in the bottom three.
Do you want me to read you their next fixtures between now and the end of the season? So obviously, as you say, they've got Tottenham Monday.
It's only going to upset Everton fans when you do not.
Well, if you look, they've got a lot of work to do.
Already, yeah.
They've got Tottenham on Monday, then it's Wolves at home, Newcastle at home, FA Cup quarterfinal against Palace. They've still got to play Watford, West Ham, Manchester United, Palace again in the league, the Merseyside derby against Liverpool. This is into April, by the way. Listen to their April fixtures. Liverpool, Chelsea, Leicester, Brentford, final day of the season, Arsenal. It's going to be hard. It's going to be real
hard.
There's
not a lot of points there.
That is not easy. That's it. That is not easy. So, yeah, if Everton fans, if anyone's sitting there going, yeah, we'll be all right. I don't think there's many of them, by the way, just to reiterate that. I don't think there is many that don't think they're in a relegation battle. But if you do think you're too good to stay out of it, that's how teams go down. Everton are very much in this scrap and they need to improve quickly.
It's going to be a tricky weekend for Everton, but at least they've got that FA Cup run to look forward to in the next round of the quarterfinals. They're going to be playing Crystal Palace. That is it for today's Football Social Daily. Niall will be back a little bit later today with the dugout. Who's on the dugout today, Niall?
Got Matt Jarvis, the lightning quick winger who used to play for West Ham and Wolverhampton Wanderers. He'll be joining us. I asked him whether he reckons he could beat Jamie Vardy in a foot race, seeing as they're both the same age. So you can tune in and find out his answer.
They're the same age?
And yeah, they are. And Dean Hammond is also joining us as well, formerly of Leicester City, Southampton and Brighton. So we'll get his thoughts too on the weekend's Premier League games.
The dugout will be available later, looking ahead to the weekend. Have a great one, whatever it is you're doing. But that is it for today's Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.